Welcome back to Red Ice Radio, and thank you for tuning in. RedIceCreations.com, that is the website, and my name is Henrik Palmgren. I hope you're taking good care of yourself, eating right, thinking right, feeling right, and sharpening your focus and intention onto the things that you want to make or create for yourself. But what a time to be alive, huh? There's so much going on right now, it is crazy. Feels like I'm saying that quite a bit lately, but it's true, it's not slowing down, and I don't believe it's going to ease down either. This is the big squeeze on so many levels. Who is going to make it? We have generated earthquakes, false flag shootings, incredible scientific discoveries, scary technology, and conspiracies that are revealed every day, it seems like, while new ones are initiated as well, I'm sure. If you're not seeing or sensing this, you are not paying close enough attention. Simple as that. But on a positive note, so many things are being revealed and unveiled right now. And at the pace that all of this is happening at is simply astonishing. We have David Icke with us today on the program. He hardly needs an introduction, but people are discovering and tuning into our program all the time. So if you are new to the program and David's work, we can tell you that he is a former sports presenter with the BBC. He has written 16 books and traveled to over 40 countries since 1990. His books reveal how a hidden hand is behind world-changing events like the attacks of 9/11 and the manufactured wars in the Middle East, as a part of a mass mind manipulation technique that he has dubbed problem-reaction-solution. While being controversial and often heavily attacked, David Icke has driven on with his unrelentless investigation into subject areas that others don't dare to touch. He reveals information that has been kept from a dumbed-down population and has allowed the establishment to treat them as nothing more than slaves to a sinister hidden agenda. Welcome back to Red Ice Radio, David Icke. It's a pleasure to talk to you once more. How are you today, David?
I'm all right, Henrik. Snowed under with things to do at the moment, but that's a good thing. You know,
aren't we all? Yeah.
The interest is very encouraging.
Absolutely, you bet. And I think you are getting better and better in every book that you write, David, to condense the agenda and to talk about your own background, what happened to you, and of course how you see the world from a geopolitical level to a spiritual or even holographic level. And obviously there's so much of what you bring up in the new book, Remember Who You Are, that I want to address with you today. I thought just before, though, we go into it, just to recap quickly, in March 2010, we did a program with you, and then earlier, just two programs before that, with Anne Grieg and Robert Greene about their situation related to the sexual abuse of Anne's daughter, Holly Grieg.
Right.
And of course, how Robert Greene had been helping them to expose the Scottish establishment's pedophile rings. Can you just tell us a bit of what has happened to Robert and what you know since this time?
Well, Robert was jailed for something called a breach of the peace, which is, in this case, handing out leaflets explaining why there needs to be an investigation, a proper one, because there never has been, into the allegations of Holly Gregg and the sexual and violent abuse that was inflicted on her, she says, by members of the Scottish establishment. And, of course, Scotland is a very major center for this global elite bloodline and of Satanism and secret societies. And so you have a situation where if the lid was lifted in Scotland or the stone was lifted in Scotland to on the Scottish establishment, well, my goodness me, how that would lift the lid on so many other things that connect into it.
Mm-hmm.
It's no accident that we have the biggest secret society in the world in terms of numbers is the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry. So what Robert Greene and those campaigning in relation to the Holly Gregg case were dealing with was, if you like to use another metaphor, it was a big, big domino and is. And if that one falls, well, a lot of others go with it. And so there has been clearly massive manipulation, mendacity, and a downright fraud in the end, to make sure that the real truth about Holly Gregg, what happened to her, who was involved, and why there has not been, and Robert's court case really brought this out in the evidence, mm-hmm. why there has not been anything approaching a proper investigation into her allegations. And of course, what they had to do was make sure that when he appeared in court, that the witnesses he wanted to have his counsel question in relation to all this, including the lack of investigation, like Elish Angelini, the former head law officer, basically the Lord Advocate in Scotland, why she, both as Lord Advocate and when she was chief law officer in the area where it happened, in around Aberdeen, or is alleged to have happened, why in neither case was an investigation carried out and played through. But he couldn't question her because the judge would not allow her to appear as a witness. And there was not a jury, there was just a judge making this decision. So when you look at it, it's a head shaker. Yeah. And it was obvious that they were going to do what they could to make life as difficult as possible for Robert Greene. But, you know, I've met a lot of people in my life, and when it comes to tenacity, when it comes to decency, when it comes to seeking what is right, no matter what the consequences for yourself, well, Robert Greene is right up there, because there's nothing in this for him. There is nothing except hassle. There's nothing except stress. There's nothing except pressure from the establishment over many years now. And yet he's still there, and he's still going, and he's in prison at the moment, and he's still working to get this this story circulating to the public, and to continue to put pressure on the authorities to do what they desperately do not want to do, which is thoroughly investigate this case. And why don't they want to do that? Because they're terrified of where it might lead.
Yeah, and it connects with so many other probably networks as well around the world. If we have this scenario of mass amounts of children and women and what have you being kidnapped around the world, being sent to different places, then this Scottish particular, this ring will undoubtedly connect with other rings as well. And there's been exposés of this in the past, and it seems to go only so far, David. And then after a certain while, the investigations are shut down. They discover and notice that it's on an international level. It's big, it's huge. Then you don't hear anything else after that.
Well, I mean, for a start, anything that uncovers the happenings of the Scottish establishment in terms of Satanism and child abuse and all the rest of it will immediately connect into the Westminster Parliament. Immediately. I mean, they're almost indivisible. And of course, these rings are rings within rings. In the end, it's a global network. And so if you keep pushing and going down this road of uncovering one ring, especially a fundamentally important one to them, like the one in Scotland, then you keep walking. Well, you know, the range of what you uncover just gets bigger and bigger and bigger and expands out and out and out. And it certainly leaves Britain, goes into Europe, goes across to America, and eventually encompasses the globe. Mm. Because one of the things that I came across many years ago, right back in the 90s, for various synchronistic reasons that came into my life, was the scale of the number of children that go missing every year, never to be seen again. In America alone, it's staggering.
Yeah.
See, the big problem is, and I understand it, is that people equate the number of children that go missing with the number of high-profile stories of children going missing on the mainstream media. Like, of course, the Madeleine McCann story was a classic example of this. Mm-hmm. But they are just the tip of the iceberg doesn't even begin to describe the scale of children that go missing through various forms and in various ways every year. It is a stunning global figure, which goes into the millions if you add them all up. I'm sure there's no question about that. Most of them, are never heard of again, and it's all just forgotten. I mean, in many countries, no one even bothers to look for them. You know, I talked to Credo Mutwa, the Zulu shaman, and he says this is happening in Africa. This is happening in his own community in the Kalahari region, where children are being taken and never to be seen again. And, you know, in these 22 years that I've been at least consciously on this journey, every time a subject comes in, like this one we're talking about with children, as I go into other subjects and other areas as the years go on, eventually all these different, apparently totally unconnected subjects start to come together. And to understand the scale of child abuse, the scale of missing children, the scale of satanic ritual killing of children, we need to understand the force behind this global conspiracy that operates from the shadows, and why it wants the energy of children, and why throughout known history people have talked about sacrificing young virgins to the gods. And what we realize is that that's just code. Young virgins means children. Mm-hmm. And what I've uncovered over the years is that these entities that go under endless different names, you know, I call them the reptilians, although there are other non-human forms involved, but the reptilian one seems dominant at that level, though it goes well out beyond them, I suggest. But others call them the Chitahuri in Zulu, in the Zulu lore. They're known as the Archons in the Gnostic writings. They're known as the Jinn in Islamic belief. And on and on and on it goes. And these entities feed off human energy. And because, like everything with energy, the energy of different frequencies syncs with energy of the same frequency. And thus, these entities, to absorb human energy, have to have energy that is within the frequency range they can absorb. And it seems to me that this relates to low vibrational human emotion, that relates to fear, to frustration, to depression, to frustration, all these things. The emotion that leads to violence is in wars, conflicts, individual and collective, all this energy that they absorb. And but there's a particular energy that is like a nectar to them, and that is the energy of children before puberty. As I pointed out in the books over the years, this reality that we experience as physical through the conscious mind is actually illusory physical. It's holographic. We decode it to appear physical, but actually it's illusory. This is why quantum physicists can't understand why atoms supposed to make up the this solid physical world, which isn't, when atoms have no solidity. But it's not a paradox. It's because they don't have to be solid. Nothing has to be solid to create an illusory solid reality, a holographic reality. And so when we go back to the base construct of everything, whether it's the human body or the universe, or certainly as we experience it anyway, it's a waveform vibrational information construct, and what we call the physical, the holographic, is like a movie screen. The waveform level, what I call the metaphysical universe, is like the projector at the back of the movie theater. It's from where all this comes, and then it hits the screen and we see the movie. But what we're doing through what I call the human body computer is we are decoding that waveform information construct into holographic reality on our personal screens, which is the decoded by the genetic structure, the brains involved, obviously, but the DNA and the genetic structure in general are doing this. So therefore, when we see what they call puberty, we see a hormonal change, a chemical change. But that chemical change in holographic reality is merely a decoded expression of an energetic change going on in the child.
Right.
An energetic change, an information change, which is moving the child from being a child into what we call adulthood. And it's that energy before that change takes place that these entities most want to absorb, what most want to have as a food source, a power source. And thus, throughout history, we've had this theme of children, in effect, being sacrificed to the gods because they want that energy. And so what's happening to these children, many of these children, I mean, a lot of these children that go missing, never to be seen again, there will be other explanations for it. But in terms of the ratio of them, a large number of them, I suggest, a very large number, end up in sacrificial rituals. They end up being in pedophile rings and stuff like that. And they're having their energy vampired. Because there is the process, horrific as it sounds, but we need to face these things if we're going to sort them out,
yep.
Where at the point of sacrifice, the energy of the child is released and the entities absorb that energy. But there's also the pedophilia aspect of this, where these bloodlines, these hybrid bloodlines, which were known in the ancient world as the demigods and what have you, are a hybrid genetic creation that is part human and part reptilian. And so they have this dual genetics. And they were created specifically to be the middlemen and women within our reality, what we call visible light and the electromagnetic spectrum, etc., to represent the agenda of these hidden entities in human society, so that we are manipulated and have our society directed by forces we don't know exist, because it seems to be being done by people in places of leadership and influence and power that appear to be human. Well, actually, they're conduits, and this relationship can be this dynamic can be described and symbolized very much like this. You have often you see scientists in a laboratory who can't work directly with some material. So the material goes in a sealed tank. They stand outside the sealed tank and they put their arms into the tank and work with the material while they're outside of it.
Right.
If you take the tank to be symbolic of our reality, human reality, you take the scientists to be these entities operating outside of that frequency range overwhelmingly, though not entirely, and the gloves that they use to go inside the tank to be these hybrid bloodlines, well, then you have the dynamic. And so these bloodlines are a conduit. And because of their hybrid nature, again, you take hybrid genetics, you take that to its base form, which is waveform. It's an energy field that is very much more vibrationally compatible with these reptilians than the general run of the population. And that's why these bloodlines were created, so that they could be very powerfully possessed by these entities, and their mental and emotional passes for emotional processes could be taken over, and thus they're just the middlemen and women that allow these entities to manipulate human society while
right.
humans have no idea they exist. And where I'm going with this in terms of pedophilia is that this genetic compatibility, it's horrible what I'm going to say, but you know, let's face it, means that when a pedophile is having sex with especially a pedophile within this bloodline is having sex with a child, what that what is happening is the overshadowing entity possessing that pedophile and stimulating that desire for sex with children is drawing off the child's energy through the conduit pedophile and absorbing the child's energy. That's why, as I started to uncover this from the early 90s up to present day, one of the things I found again and again is if you follow some of these major names in the conspiracy and you follow them through in terms of investigation and research, secret societies always come up, Satanism always comes up with the top people, and so does pedophilia. Mm. Those three things continually come up in relation to these major bloodline personalities. And this is the kind of reason why. And you really, when you go along this journey of research, if you go along it with a preconceived idea, with a religious belief, a political belief, a scientific belief, well, forget it, because unless you're prepared to let them go in the light of the information, then you're never going to get into the rabbit hole more than a very short distance, because you are going to censor where you need to go to understand this whole deal that we're going through. So you can see there, Henrik, we've started off talking about Holly Gregg and her allegations about the paedophilia and Satanism of the Scottish establishment and Robert Greene and what he's doing. And already we're miles away from that, talking about entities and all the rest of it. Mm. This is how the tapestry works. And we must, if we're going to understand this and allow it to unfold for us, we need to be really light on our feet in terms of where we're prepared to go. And not censor things just because at first hearing they sound fantastic. Otherwise, we're just in our own box. We're in a different box to people that dismiss the conspiracy altogether, but we're still in a box.
That's right. Absolutely. It's very, you know, important to be able to connect the dots, and that's why that's one of the most dangerous things of all to the establishment as it is. It's like, you can hear stories, and they're in their disconnected manner, no problem. You can do a great job in that sense from the point of view of media of actually extracting information about what truly is going on. But when you begin to connect the dots, it's all of a sudden then their viewpoint on you is that then you're mad. Then you're the guy with all the newspaper clippings on the wall kind of thing.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And but that's really where the key lies, though, when you actually begin to connect the dots. And what you say, also doing that without actually going out to just only confirming your initial belief, but actually letting the information lead you where it may. It's so important, and that's all what this is about, laying the puzzle in a sense.
This is the thing, Henrik, you see. I mean, what stupidity, in my view, and what unbelievable arrogance to think that we, in this manipulated density, can possibly know everything that we need to know or there is to know. That's yep. ridiculous. And when you bring it down to its most extreme, you know, we're living within an infinite reality, of which this one that we think we're experiencing is but a tiny sliver of all possibility. And yet when you bring it down to its most extreme, the people are saying that all you need to know is written by who knows when, in who knows what circumstances, between two covers of a single book called a Bible or a Quran or whatever else they call them. Mm. It's ridiculous. And I've reached the point some time ago now where I can say I don't believe anything. I don't believe anything. And I think we really need to get into that realm of not believing anything. And what I mean by that is that I have a perception at any point of how I see things and how I see things are. But I know that because there is the vastness of forever, that there's always, always more to know about everything. And therefore, nothing solidifies into a belief that then starts to repel all borders to protect itself from being moved on. I have a perception of how things are, but I've got me trainers on, and I'm light on me feet, and I'm ready to go in any direction, any moment, in the light of new insight, new information, new experience. Because as Socrates in ancient Greece is supposed to have said, even if it didn't, it was brilliant, wisdom is knowing how little we know.
Yep.
And that keeps your mind open. So nothing solidifies into a belief. It's always a perception of how things are, which you're prepared to move any time if what comes to you is justified.
That's right. But this is also now we're in the realm of psychology and battling with people's belief system, as you say. And there's also a tendency to be in this safety zone that it's secure, it's comfortable to. To have an idea that the authorities or the scientific field or religion, God, whatever, has things in control. We don't have to worry about how it really is. And so from my point of view, David, then there's something with the human psyche almost in a way that we need to try to you know, awaken in a sense, that it's nothing wrong with stepping outside of that box and actually, you know, beginning to take a leap of faith and admit that we don't know everything. That's just the way it is. So let's discover it. Let's reinvent this idea of actually not admitting that we don't know anything and go from there. But that's very difficult. We're up against quite a bit there, aren't we?
Yes, and this really brings us into an area that I write about in the new book, and of course, when a book is finished, it doesn't mean I stop and sit around until the next one starts. The moment a book is finished and it's gone to the printers, I'm still moving. I mean,
right.
I find it extraordinary, you know, when I see people, researchers, like years and years ago, making a presentation, and it's always very interesting. Yes, very, and then you 10 years later, you see them again, and they make the same presentation. It's like, where have we been? You know, we need to, if we're going to understand what's going on, constantly expand and expand, so we grasp more and more of what we're part of, because that's leading us closer and closer to understanding how we do something about it. Because you're not going to change the five sense world in the five sense world. That's like standing on a movie in a movie theater screaming at the screen and telling it to change. It ain't going to change. It's a done deal. It's at the screen. We've got to get back to where this is coming from and change that. That's how we do it. So, you know, the Illuminati, as some people call them, and sometimes they call themselves, this network of bloodlines and secret societies behind global events, they don't have any problem overwhelmingly with people trying to change this reality within this reality, because they know it ain't going to change. This is what they're trying to keep from us. And so we need to open our minds and let the information be our guide and not a preconceived idea, because we need to go into some very strange areas. And when we do, strange from the normal point of view, and when we do, suddenly we can start to make sense of what's happening. And you mentioned there, Henrik, about the way people are kind of locked off from going in these areas, and they operate in a very tiny expanse of possibility.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And funnily enough, one of the greatest ways of keeping people under control and asleep and ignorant is to implant upon them a sense of what's possible. You do this by keeping from them all the information, the scientific information, esoteric information that shows that what is possible is vastly greater than what is perceived to be possible. But if you can get people to think, no, that's not possible, when people start talking about this is happening in the world and this is how they're doing it, people immediately go, that's ridiculous. That's not possible. What they're saying is they don't believe it's possible, not that it's not possible. And thus they dismiss explanations of the world on the basis of what they've been programmed to believe is possible, which is basically what you can see, touch, taste, and all the rest of it. And the area that it might be good to talk about in relation to this box is something that, in my view, this is fundamental to why that is. Of course, I'm sure you've talked many times on this program about, indeed, there's a History Channel series now, Aliens the Series, or Ancient Aliens the Series.
Right, yeah.
One of those programs was entirely about this phenomena that I've been writing about for so long, of this common theme around the world in almost any culture of how some non-human race or non-human group manipulated human genetics. And I am absolutely convinced that this is what happened.
Just to follow on that, Dave, I want to let you give you time to explain that. But
yeah,
do you believe that this is a that the Earth was created, if you will, then, or potentially even the human race, to be their farm, and much in the same way that we have cows or sheep or what have you? Or did the reptilian slash Gnostic, the archons, what have you, come along later on and actually transform it into this? What do you believe about that?
Well, this is my view, Enric, in terms of the theme of the story. I would say that at some distant point in how we perceive time, of course, which is another illusion, human society was very much along the lines, in many ways, of that which was portrayed by the Avatar movie. You had the blue people on the moon, the Pandora moon, and they were aware that everything was connected. They communicated with the natural world. They communicated with the animals. And they were at a much more expanded level of consciousness, and their range of frequency that they could decode into holographic reality, if you like, was much, much wider than this almost pathetic, tiny frequency range that we can now decode into any kind of physical reality as we perceive it, known as visible light, which is so tiny, it's almost laughable. And then in the Avatar movies, along came these, in the film, they were American military people from sometime into the future with their high technology, or what passed for it. And this was a completely different mentality. They came in with their technology. They had no perception of the connectedness of anything. They were all left brain, everything apart from everything else. Their values were not this beautiful interconnected world, but there's resources under this blue people's buddy society that are worth a fortune. So let's go in and get them and smash it all up and take the resources. Mm. If you take that mentality portrayed in the Avatar movie to be, the reptilians coming in, I would say that that's very, very symbolic of it. And also, interestingly, in the Avatar movie, by its very nature and name, there was the concept of the American military, i.e., I would say the reptilians and other non-human groups, that infiltrated the blue people's society by taking on an outer shell of the blue people.
Yeah, yeah.
So that they could infiltrate that society without the blue people having any idea they were being infiltrated. Now, all those themes, Henrik, I think are absolutely what happened to Earth. There was an infiltration, there was a hijack, fantastic geological events which basically wiped clean and deleted the previous society was all part of this. And I have to say, I someone sent me an interview you did with somebody called Troy something. I think Troy.
That's right.
Who was mentioned in his interview that I was caught in the idea that this solar system has always been as it is now. I mean, my jaw dropped. I mean, that's ludicrous. I mean, I've been writing about the Velikovsky view of great cataclysmic events which moved all the planets, etc., about almost from the start, right back into the 90s. And right. I think that happened in concert with this hijack. And I think the original one was much further back than some people believe. But anyway, that doesn't matter. The fact that it happens is the point.
Right.
And then the genetic manipulation. Now they've got a blank sheet of paper, or in effect. And the genetic manipulation started. And this is what I'm suggesting happened. You know, depending on the scientists you talk to, they say that something between 90 and 98% of human DNA is what they call junk DNA or non-coding DNA. And the word junk came because they don't know, they didn't know what it does. Most of it, they still don't know what it does. And the idea that between 90 and 98% of human DNA has no function is ludicrous. I'm suggesting that actually what is within non-coding DNA, which they're now using as a term much more because it's becoming even ludicrous to them that it doesn't have any function. And of course, open-minded, cutting-edge scientists around the world, particularly some in Russia, have concluded that non-coding DNA has its own language, as they put it, and it's different to the DNA that we think we know about. And I'm saying actually that within junk DNA, you have the inserted biological equivalent of software programs which are driving human behavior and human perceptions. And from that that software inserted, implanted within non-coding DNA, come human personalities as we perceive them. I found it interesting that people like Carl Jung and other psychologists and psychiatrists over the years have claimed that they could break down human personalities into 12 major, more than that, yes, but 12 major archetypes and combinations of them. Now, when you're dealing with all possibility, the great forever that we really are beyond this illusory nonsense, then that's obviously the idea that you can break down human personalities into a group of archetypes and combinations. That's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But what can you break down into a few archetypes and combinations? Software programs, personalities, traits, emotional traits and responses and reactions, which are actually running within the human genetic structure. Now, I also found it interesting that I read so many accounts, Henrik, of near-death experiences that people have had, which included words to the effect of, when I was outside the body, I didn't feel emotion like I did within the body. Mm-hmm. I didn't have human emotion. Doesn't mean they were kind of cold or anything like that, but the human emotion they did not have of the type that we experience.
It's tied to
the
body. It's tied to the genetics, those emotions. Yeah.
Yes, that's what I'm saying, that these emotional programs were implanted during this genetic manipulation of the human form, which went on and is recorded by all these ancient cultures. And so, if we are only perceiving reality from what I call body-mind, which is the holographic form and the energetic fields that interact with it, body-mind, and not opening that and allowing the greater self in, consciousness as I call it, which is operating and perceiving and observing from beyond this realm of our experience currently, then I suggest that it is very possible, and I think it's very common, shall I say, that people can go through an entire human lifetime without having a single original thought or emotional response that has not come from within this software or externally manipulated sources. And therefore, when you're in that state, you become incredibly predictable. And when you, it's like, you know, if you type information into a computer, you know what that computer's going to do when you press enter, because it's programmed to do that.
Yep.
And in the same way, as you type information into a computer, that's symbolic in the human experience of the various situations we find ourselves in. And when you go around the world, of course there are exceptions, but generally, if people of different cultures face the same situation, it's almost like pressing enter. You pretty much know how they're going to respond. And you take it to this other aspect. I was speaking earlier about the fact that these entities feed off human low vibrational emotional energy.
Mm.
Well, by putting the emotional program within the body-mind biological computer, as I see it, all you then have to do, Henrik, is to create a society which, by its nature, is constantly triggering the emotional responses within the software.
Mm, yeah.
And what's that doing? It's turned humans into producers of the very energy that these entities use as a power source. So when in the Matrix movie you had the Morpheus character holding up the battery and saying, basically, summarizing, that humans have been turned into one of these, that is a profound truth in my view.
Mm.
And so if we are going to get out of this enslavement, and this is why the control system is terrified of this, we need to open our minds to allow consciousness in. And when we and to do that, we've got to put aside all these preconceived beliefs, preconceived ideas, which act like energetic firewalls and sensors to stop us being influenced by the greater self. And we become isolated in terms of our point of attention into basically five sense reality. And when we're enslaved inside five sense reality, we are in the very stadium which these entities have created and thus are experts at. And so when someone opens their minds to consciousness, they then begin to perceive the world differently because their point of attention has now been dramatically expanded. Yet, yes, they still have a point of attention in the five senses because that's how we interact with this reality, but it's expanded out into consciousness. And thus you see the world in a much more expanded way. You can see things you couldn't see before. You can see how the dots connect, because all you could see was individual dots before that seemed to have no connection. And suddenly it's like, whoa, I never saw this before. And what happens then is those that are still being played by the program, they listen to these people and look at these people, and all they can respond with is, you're crazy.
Mm.
That's ridiculous. That's impossible. You want a psychiatrist, mate, because they literally can't perceive what you're perceiving. There's that great line, I think it's from the writer John Milton, who said words to the effect of, the dancer and the dance. You cannot understand the dancer if you can't hear the music that the dancer is dancing to. You just think they're crazy, dancing for no reason. And so you see this awakening, Henrik, that's going on now as people are teasing out of this program version of self in the world, and they're starting to move that point of observation, and we call it an awakening. What is actually it is breaking the bubble that most people live in, which keeps a consciousness out.
And it's about time, too. I mean, if I see it, I've mentioned this many times before, but I see it kind of falling two ways, because you seem to have one group of humans as well that are kind of falling deeper into the illusion, deeper into the bubble. It's almost like a computer game as well. You have a handful of these characters that you can choose between, in a sense. And their ability, rather, to actually being able to predict the future, to come up with a, you know, to run a supercomputer on a program, basically, that has a preset, program that is about detecting future behavior. You need to have a population that is very, very limited in these responses that you talk about as well. So it's about control at the bottom of this as well, and also to kind of create a limit the bandwidth of the consciousness itself and create a kind of a small-minded people, in a sense, because once you get them inside of that box, they're very, very easy to be, to track their behavior, and predictable in a sense as well. So I feel that the control aspect is essential in this case. And that's why, as you said, David, they hate people who actually break out of the mold, because we have this illusion of individuality. What color do you want on your iPhone? That's how it's extended now. And uniqueness and individuality is almost out the door, unfortunately.
It's like I saw on a car sticker in California once, you laugh at me because I'm different, I laugh at you because you're all the same. This is the dynamic of it. But what you say there about squeezing the frequency, I'm absolutely with. I've been writing about that for years, because one of the big breakthroughs is when you start to understand that DNA is a receiver-transmitter. And, of course, a receiver-transmitter operates on what? It operates on a frequency range. And, you know, these stories about in the ancient world, the gods lived among them. Well,
right.
I think the gods did live among them, because their frequency range of humans to decode reality into what we would call a physical reality was much wider. And therefore, we could see these, quote, gods, because they were within the much more expanded frequency range that we could access and perceive. This genetic manipulation, I strongly suggest, a major part of it was to squeeze the frequency range that the human body computer, as I call it, body-mind, DNA receiver-transmitter, was receiving and transmitting on, and thus the gods are still where they always were, but we can't see them anymore, because we are no longer going that far out in the frequency band where we can actually see them. And so they have hidden themselves from human sight by genetic manipulation, and then created these hybrid bloodlines, the Illuminati bloodlines, within this tiny frequency range of human perception, to be the conduits for their agenda, while humans have not a clue that it's actually going on. And to understand what's happening, you have to get out of body mind. There is a limit to how much names, dates, places, research. I do all that. I've done it for 20 years. It needs doing. But there is a limit to how far down the rabbit hole that is going to take you. And it's my view, for what it's worth, that if you're an expert on 9/11, an expert on banking scams, political scams, engineered wars, and engineered terrorist events, all of which needs researching and exposing, but if that's you're an expert on that, and that alone, you're still walking around the outer rim of the rabbit hole. From my perspective, you've not even entered it yet. And what we have, of course, is religious belief, political belief, cultural belief, all acting as suppressors of open-minded, go-where-the-music-takes-you research, and also realizing that a lot of stuff has got to come through your own intuitive knowing, and by reading the language of life and the signs and the clues that we're given. Because there comes a point where if you want names, dates, places, proof for everything, I's dotted, T's crossed, well, okay, you'll go that far, but you won't go any further, because there comes a point where that information is not available. We have to go through other ways of perceiving and bringing this awareness into some kind of storyline, if you like, to explain what's going on.
That's right. We're going to take a break in a minute or so, David. But before that, I just want to comment a bit on what you said earlier, because there's actually some science behind this idea as well, that belief, obviously, and you know this, affects reality. But we also have the idea that even science, the written word, the alphabet in itself, even the law that's connected with that, written law versus oral law, actually are changing your consciousness dramatically. It locks us into the left brain portion of the world. And there's even studies done on how human civilization has been going up and down. This is from the work of people like Leonard Schlein, for instance, and shows actually how the adaptation of the written word, how that has transformed society as far as if we look at the revival of images and the Renaissance, things like that, versus the alphabetical written side of things. And so there is science behind this idea that we're totally locked down in what's on the paper kind of thing. And this also constructs our perception of reality, meaning that's another factor why I think people are not prone to be in a mystical consciousness these days, David. They don't see the things that mankind allegedly did, many, many thousands of years ago, where they have more interaction with the environment, almost more of the avatar type, society that you mentioned before, David.
Yeah, well, if we come up to a break pretty shortly, Henrik, I'll wait till afterwards. But I was having a conversation only about 20 minutes before the interview started with someone about this very thing and the relationship of word communication as opposed to other kinds of communication. And it's something I'd like to talk about when we've had the break.
Absolutely. Let's do that then and come right back. I'm going to, of course, mention in the meantime here that the book is called Remember Who You Are. It's a new, excellent book that you can pick up either at davidicke.com, that's the main website, obviously, or at davidicebooks.com as well. And if there is someone who wants to know more, by the way, about Robert Greene, there is a website currently set up for that. You have it linked up on your site as well. It's freerobertgreene.co.uk, where you can find out more about that and how to get involved and potentially help along into getting Robert out there. Anything else you want to mention about books or website, David, please go ahead.
Well, no, that's fine. The other thing that I'm doing this year is the biggest event I've ever done at Wembley Arena in London, because that can be anything between 5,000 and 10,000 people, depends on how many want to come. It's a decision we have to make in the very end of July on what numbers we're going to cater for. But the reason I'm doing it is because, first of all, we kind of outgrown in terms of interest the London venues we did before, and the middle venues like the Albert Hall didn't want to know. and so I decided to go for it and go for this major venue because I wanted to make a statement that could not be ignored, which is have a look at the number of people who are here. Something's changing, something's happening. Look at it. And also, I think, if we can gather enough people together of like mind in one place and those sort of numbers, then the impact on some people call the morphic field, the information field of the Earth, will be fantastic, especially in an energetically very important area of England and London. I mean, the conspiracy is not so much based in London and England for no reason. It's all about energy, and it's all about controlling the energy grid. And there are many levels to this Wembley event, so that's the thing that I'm really working for this year.
Excellent. Just go to davidicke.com and just scroll down, and you see the banner or the poster right there. David Icke, Remember Who You Are. It's at the Wembley Arena in London there, October 27th, 2012, and you can book your tickets right there as well. That's excellent. Did you ever think you'd end up on the stage in Wembley, David, by the way?
No, I never thought I'd end up on any stage at one point worth the name stage, because no one wanted to know. But it's fantastic that if I have this phrase, you can't unhear something. So keep speaking your truth, and if people laugh at you, well, fine. And if people dismiss you, well, fine. But if your truth has any validity, it will eventually be shown to be so. And when it is, people won't be able to forget where they first heard it. And thus, you can make reality change by continually to speak your truth and to walk your truth, rather than let reality change you, which is what most people do by accepting the program reality that we're given from cradle to grave and accept that it is real when it's nothing more than a program, an enslavement device.
Absolutely right. Okay, once more then, davidicke.com, head on over there. We'll take a short break. I'll be right back with more. Stay with us.
Don't miss our next hour with David Icke, available right now in our members area. We are 100% independent. We are not on any network and therefore free from censorship. We go where we need to get answers to the questions that we have, and we spare you from commercial breaks, and we always put the guest and the topic at the center of our program. In the next hour, we'll begin to talk about the waking up process, which is constant. You don't do it and then it's done. There are new levels and new information that you discover all the time. We'll talk about how humans are trapped in the left brain, tied to the alphabet, and how words create a vibrational field that it's easy to get stuck in. We'll move on to discuss mass ritual, symbols, and energy vampirism, and this includes David's take on the 2012 Sion Olympics in London. David comments on the future of technology and robotics. He says the controllers expect a rebellion, therefore attacks on humanity using a robot army have already been planned to prevent the truth vibration from thriving on the planet. We'll talk about our multidimensional matrix and the multidimensional effort to keep us locked into a certain vibrational state. David gives a new perspective on death, the body, mind, and reincarnation. Death is no cure for ignorance. We end the program talking about our constant mind shatter and emotional responses as running programs. Go to redicecreations.com and log in or subscribe to listen to our continuation with David Icke or any of our previous programs going back to 2006. We have well over 500 programs on all kinds of exciting, important, and fascinating topics. Do have a look around in our archives. There's a number of ways you can listen to the program, stream or download, RSS feed, iPhone. We have so much for free, a year of radio right there on the website for you, available on demand. And check out our TV programs as well, of course, but it's really as a member that you get the whole experience, if you will. We have both hours available through RSS feed, we have an iPhone app, and yes, we are moving on to Android support next. Our subscriptions are €5 per month. We have a 3-month recurring subscription option, or you can make a one-time payment from 3 months up to 2 years, whatever fits your need, and you don't have to sign up for a PayPal account either. We have all the instructions for you on the website. Continue to listen to Red Eyes Radio for more of the best. Our next program is with Robert Schock about the Sphinx Mystery, Forgotten Civilization, and Solar Storm Catastrophe. Don't miss that. And after this, we have Håkan Blomqvist on the unique and very strange alien encounter case of Richard Höglund. After this, we have Mike Cross, Dean Clifford, Marty Leeds, J.J. Hertak, and Desiree Hertak, Lucy Wyatt, Sterling Allen, Kurt Lindahl, Stefan Molyneux, Matt Stein, Jordan Maxwell, William Davis, Jay Widener, and Mark Weber, to name a few. Thank you for listening and for supporting independent, intelligent, and open-minded radio. We'll be right back with David Icke.